Bobby Smith versus Burl Cain. Mr. Kraft, we'll be pleased to hear from you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I have the honor of having been appointed to represent Mr. Smith in these proceedings. The text on which I'm relying, thanks to the good offices of the staff attorney who brought it to our attention in the order of this court that we follow a supplemental brief, comes from Cullen versus Penholster in April of 2011, where they said, "We now hold that review under 2254D1 is limited to the record that was before the state court that adjudicated the claim on the merits." Section 2254D1 refers in the past tense to a state court adjudication that resulted in a decision that was contrary to or involved an unreasonable application of established law. This backward-looking language requires an examination of the state court decision at the time it was made. It follows that the record under review is limited to the record in existence at that same time, i.e., the record before the state court.
Okay, what do we do in this case? What would you have us do in this case?
I would have you do what has been done in all the other cases that have applied it and say that the district courts are limited to review with the state court before it. I will tell you in all candor that I have not yet found one where it was directed toward the respondent. But it doesn't. There doesn't seem to be any grounds for.
What would you say? Should we do?
You should reverse this case because its ruling was based upon an expansion of the state court record at the evidentiary hearing.
So we reverse the district court.
Yes.
And then do what?
And then direct that the writ of habeas corpus be issued because.
Why should it be issued if? If you've shown a violation, but you haven't showed that you're entitled to the relief, why do you all automatically? I mean, if you had a normal case, let's say it was still in the state system, wouldn't you remand it to the state to make a determination pursuant to the constitutional rule that would require the state to give its reasons and develop the record then? Seems like the only thing that we could do is we could either allow this hearing to go on and use that as a hearing, or send it back to the state, say that the state district court used the wrong standard, that was clearly went against clearly established law, and order the state to have a hearing. But how do we get to just an absolute determination of the ultimate issue without knowing whether there was a race-neutral reason or not?
Because Cullen versus Penholster put you in that position.
No, I didn't.
Cullen versus Penholster said you can only rely upon the state record as it existed
for the state court that ruled. So you're saying we grant habeas relief and order the conviction to be set aside, and he's entitled to a new trial. Is that what you would say?
Yes, because
and even though the defense attorney didn't ask for neutral reasons, even though the defense attorney's own presentation to the state judge is deficient, you kind of win by default. Everybody did a bad job, so you win.
Oh yes,
I don't think it's going to work.
It has to under Cullen versus Penholster. Cullen versus Penholster has painted you in a corner because they didn't leave a middle ground. They said you can only rely on the record that was before the state court.
But, yes, sir. I mean, it's an ironic position for you to be in to be opposing a federal hearing.
I only have one client at a time.
Right. But just think through the logic. One, you didn't object in front of Judge Tyson. Of course, you wouldn't have had the Penholster basis to object.
Right. Penholster had not yet happened.
But when you look, Penholster, the court applies AEDPA deference by virtue of the language in 2254.
Right.
And when you look at the exact language, it only states, it's phrased in the negative. You can only grant habeas. So actually, I don't even read that Penholster would apply. Admittedly, it's an unusual double standard, but when you look at the text of 2254, it only limits going you to the state record if you intend to grant the habeas. But here the district court denied it, and I don't even see how Penholster would apply to a denial. You could have an evidentiary hearing and then deny.
The basic principles behind AEDPA, behind these amendments to 2254, and behind Cullen versus Penholster ultimately is a matter of comity and federalism.
You didn't answer the question. The statute and the ruling specifically refer to the ability or the inability, rather, of a federal court to grant relief. It's a restriction on the granting of relief, not the denial of a relief.
The plain language of Cullen versus Penholster is not so limited. We now hold that review is limited to the record that was before the
All right, why don't we do this then? Why don't we just say, as we effectively said, the district court, I mean the state court erred, and on the state court record, we grant habeas relief. The relief in this case is a hearing on the issue. And then we grant federal habeas relief, give them a hearing, and then deny it and send it back.
That would slice through the Gordian knot. Because you
that's what's done. That's exactly the process that is used when the district judge should have held a hearing on race-neutral reasons. Mm-hmm. You find and you send it back, and you still haven't granted. If you send it back, you still haven't granted or denied the hearing.
But that's when you're talking about when you see a race-neutral reasons issue on a federal conviction, right? And of course it is. But we do have this line of the fact that the Supreme Court drew this bar that said we're only going to look at the state court record as it exists, and it doesn't say in its plain language only to grant relief. I admit to you that's how it came up to them, but that's not what they said. They said review is limited to the record. They said you can't expand the record. Why should the state be allowed to expand the record when the petitioner cannot?
It does seem to be a double standard, unless the whole comedy purpose is don't overrule a state court reasoning. But even if we say Penholster applies, why doesn't this meet? What the state judge did was basically apply Swain, right? There's got to be a systemic. So you've got a clear violation of federal law, and therefore you would get the hearing anyway.
But the facts at the hearing, according to Cullen, Penholster, would be limited to the state court record that was in front of them. And in the state court record, no race-neutral reasons were cited. And I have to say, you talked about the objection at the trial court. No one has ever argued any sort of procedural default. All the reviews have simply been denials that are presumed to be substantive and on the merits. So
your best case, if we don't have Penholster, is Reed. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Continue to answer other questions, but I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about whether there is a Miller L violation. We had the same prosecutor who happened to have firsthand memory of the voir dire, correct?
Yes.
And you were able to cross-examine her?
Yes.
So.
And you were able to put on any kind of evidence that you had of comparable white jurors that may have been treated differently?
The record showed that clearly on its face, and that was argued in the briefings before the district court. The three African Americans in a row were the real big issue where it comes up. Landrum, Norman, and Flowers. Landrum is the prosecutor. Norman, Williams, and Flowers. And they are given the Class B treatment. They're given a law school examination that other jurors aren't given. And then when you see what the reasons are that come up later for the developing, you see they actually would have been good jurors. I would have kept them if I was a prosecutor. I was one once. Ms. Flowers was middle class, two children, an account executive at a local bank. Ms. Norman was a cafeteria lady. She was asked some negative questions but was able to rehabilitate it. As a matter of fact, Ms. Landrum, the prosecutor, rehabilitated herself. And Mr. Williams, the father of three, he was an analytical technician. He was a white-collar worker, and he didn't have any kind of anti-police leaning because he had a personal relationship with a murdered police officer and had been an honorary pallbearer at her funeral. There was really no good reason to cut all these people. And until we have...
But Miller L. doesn't ask us to say, would they have been a good juror?
Right.
Miller L. is saying, can we discern discriminatory intent because the race-neutral reason, comparatively, that they've offered is one they didn't use against someone of a different race?
I think if you look and see what you're going in there, no other juror was subject to the pop quiz that that the first lady got, Ms. Norman. None other, no white juror received that same treatment.
So that's the essence. I mean, you're saying here the way that Batson and Miller L. are being gotten around is this: you have a different script for jurors of one race than you do for another.
Right.
If we go into the individual jurors, if maybe you can straighten me out on. We've got a COA as to Norman and Williams. And either Williams or Norman, I can't remember, self-identified, I think, is a word that's used in the state's brief, self-identified as a person that's having trouble with this concept of parties or something like that.
Principles.
Huh?
Yeah, principles.
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 Was that Norman or Williams? Or was it both of them that self-identified?
I believe that was Williams. But then it was explained.
Is there any showing that anybody else self-identified, and with respect to that self-identification, showing whether black or white? In other words, if the people that are struck have identified themselves as people that are having problems with the law, parties, or principles, then why wouldn't more explanation or more questions about the applicable law be a normal and not a pretextual thing?
It might very well have been, but she was questioned further about that and actually thoroughly redeemed on that point.
Well, okay, but my question is, and I don't know the answer. Did Norman and Williams both self-identify, or only one of them said that she had a problem or he had a problem?
I can tell you for sure that that Williams self-identified with it,
okay.
And so did Norman. They both did.
They both self-identified.
Yes.
As people. All right. Is there anything in the record to show that anybody else that self-identified having problems with it was not similarly questioned by the state and was white or non-black?
No one else was questioned to that extent by the state on the law of principles.
Did anybody else that was shown to be white self-identify with having a question or a problem with the law of parties or principles?
I have to be frank with you, I can't accurately answer your question. It's been 3 years since we tried this thing, and I'm 59 years old, so sometimes the gray cells have to reconnect.
So the nub of your position is just the depth of questioning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can see it's law school type questioning. It's a Socratic method that's being applied to those people that's not applied to other people. The first three up who are black get hit hardest, and they are cut.
What's different about this case than Reed, which I think is either the only or the primary authority you rely on, is in Reed, the prosecutor in the reconstituted Batson hearing couldn't remember, had no firsthand recollection, right? Whereas here, the prosecutor was able to say, I remember exactly what I did. And therefore, you put everything in front of Judge Tyson, and Tyson, under Batson, has just got to make the credibility call. And Tyson clearly concludes that there wasn't a discriminatory intent. That's frustrating. It's an imperfect process, but I don't see how we can overturn that without a finding of clear error.
And we do have the advantage of hindsight aided by transcript. So these are.
But your position has to come down to us saying there's clear error in Tyson's implicit finding that this prosecutor was telling the truth when she said, I can't handle a juror who can't understand legal concepts.
I'm beginning to appreciate more the suggestion from the side of the bench that that it be remanded for state court determination. I see that my time, thankfully, is about up, and I will say what I have left for rebuttal.
Counsel, we weren't that bad on
you. As a matter of advice, I would not suggest that you tell people older than you that you have a problem with your memory because of your age.
Well, it's just that I've seen Judge Higginson up there. I'm making me feel older today.
Okay, well, Ms. Rogo.
Good morning, Your Honors. To answer one of the last questions that was asked of this court, there were numerous jurors that self-identified themselves as not understanding several key principal legal issues in the case. One was principles, one was conspiracy. I have a list for you. Numerous white jurors who did ask questions and raise their hands when asked by the prosecutor, Ms. Kim Brooks, were also struck from the jury. Jean Broussard, Doris McCoyne, Barbara DeBatez, Sidney Tyson, Teresa Jackson, Elizabeth Ladner.
And they self-identified with having problems with certain aspects of the applicable law?
They did, Your Honor. And when you review the voir dire, I believe it is clear that the only two jurors we have today, Flowers wasn't granted a certificate of appealability, so that the two main jurors are Williams and Norman. And both of them raised their hand saying, I don't understand this concept, I'm not sure about it. Both were on the third panel and so had listened to the prosecutor review all of these legal concepts throughout the day with two other panels. They had heard all of this numerous times and still weren't quite getting it. I remember Prosecutor Brooks saying during the hearing that, was it Mrs. Norman, just wasn't getting it. She said, I don't know if she didn't understand principles.
Prosecutor said as to Norman, she's the first one in the third panel.
So we need
to ask more questions of her.
Of course.
What about the two jurors that were the first ones of the first and second panel, Chase and Armstead? Is it your recollection from the record that they were asked just as many probing questions?
I'd have to look back, Your Honor. Just off the top of my head, I can't remember. I did take extensive notes on each juror. I would have to look back. I'm sorry.
What's the limiting principle that you're urging that we apply? I take it you wouldn't disagree that if there really were a different set of scripts for jurors who are black than jurors who are white, that would not be an acceptable answer.
I believe that is the case, Your Honor.
It would not be acceptable.
It would not be acceptable. Right. Of course not.
So it's just a question of degree.
I believe when you look at the voir dire and the communication, like stated earlier, it wasn't defense counsel that raised it. He didn't see a Batson challenge. I think Penholster and Colin, the standard doesn't apply because I believe when Judge Tyson was reviewing the habeas application, all he had before him was the state court. He didn't have his evidentiary hearing. And just the state court before him, he said, okay, clearly the trial court used the wrong standard. They did not apply correct. They didn't correctly apply federal law under Batson. So I'm going to do what the trial court should have done and have a hearing.
He just lucked into the Penholster standard.
That came after, I believe.
Yeah, I know.
It came after. I think he just looked at it, and Judge Tyson was a very wise judge. I knew him personally. He's a wonderful man. He was a great loss. I believe he clearly understood.
Judges are always much better when they agree with you.
Of course. I believe, and even during the hearing, we started off the hearing, and he said, no, it's the defendant's burden. That's why we're here today. And he said, you know what? Let me correct myself. I'm wrong. They held that the defendant proved a prima facie case at the trial court, and so I'm going to correct myself, do what the trial court should have done, and say, okay, now I'm wrong. State, it's your burden. We're going to go to the race-neutral reasons, and that's the whole benefit. That's why we had the hearing, because the state court did not do what they were supposed to do under Batson. And so we have the benefit of that hearing. I think a very simple reading of the record, along with the explanations from the prosecutor, show that there was no discrimination by any of them. One of the jurors, Mr. Ben Williams, yes, he was extremely close to the family of Betty Smothers, an officer in Baton Rouge who was killed. In that case, there were numerous defendants convicted for her murder, even though one person pulled the trigger and killed her. As close as he was to the family, he coached one of her sons. He was an honorary pallbearer. He told the prosecutor, I still don't agree with the concept of principles. I still think the person who pulls the trigger should be more culpable than the person who doesn't. So if he's not going to agree with principles in that case, in a very personal case, in a personal family friend, clearly the prosecutor could not trust him and rely
on
him.
That's not an incorrect statement. Is more culpable than the person. That's actually a correct statement.
As far as that
doesn't keep you from being also responsible.
Yes, as far as sentencing.
Most people would agree that that person would be more culpable.
He just expressed an opinion, and that's understandable, Your Honor. He was looking at the terms of the law. He didn't agree that that person should also be convicted of murder to the degree as the shooter in that case. So I think Judge Tyson did the right thing, and you have all discussed what would be the rational conclusion to this if we don't look at the evidentiary hearing in federal court? It's going to be remanded back to the trial court. We're going to have the hearing. We already have the benefit. Judge Tyson did the right thing. I believe Penholster doesn't apply in this case, but I also don't believe that the defendant can prove that there was a purposeful discrimination by clear and convincing evidence, and that's his burden here. If Your Honors don't have any further questions.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time.
Mr. Kraft, you have some time for rebuttal.
Some minutes.
You need? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mr. Kraft, you say you were appointed?
Yes.
Well, the court certainly appreciates your good work. You've done a very good job for your client, and we appreciate your services.
It's always a privilege to argue from you, especially in this great room. I love this room.
Yeah. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Call the next case of the day, and that's MEMC.